Yesterday, we discussed the overview of the first chapter. Today, we'll go to the second chapter. You can just put this up. Correct. First chapter is basically like setting the scene for the philosophical dialogue to start. Of course, there is some sort of analysis in the first chapter also, where especially in the later verses, Krishna is told by Arjuna about ethics and their consequences. There Prabhupada elaborately talks about Varna Sankara. We did not get time to talk about all the five factors yesterday. Five reasons why Arjuna this is not fight only. One of them is, so first was compassion. Second was enjoyment. Third was destruction of family traditions. Fourth was fear of sinful reactions. And fifth is indecision. So the third one, destruction of family traditions, is that actually Prabhupada introduces the concept of Varna Sankara over there. This is towards the later chapter, 37, 38, 39 verses of that chapter, and a little later after that also, where if the men are not responsible, then they tempt the women get polluted, and then there are children who are born who are not having good consciousness, and then they pollute society. So in this way, all the good family traditions get destroyed. So not all the family traditions are necessarily spiritual, but even the mundane family traditions are also important because they also help one to practice spirituality. Then the next reason he says is fear of sinful reactions. So actually both these reasons especially talk about Arjuna's knowledge of Shastra also, because Varna Sankara is not a concept which is commonly taught about without knowledge of Shastra. And his fear of sinful reactions is also based on, he knows that there are two factors over here. One is that relatives should not be killed. Relatives are meant to be protected. That is the meaning of family relationships. On the other hand, aggressors should be killed. So if somebody tries to abduct one's wife, or one tries to burn up one's house or attack with lethal weapons, so there are six kinds of atatainas. And the Kauravas at different times have done aggression in all six ways. So therefore, atatainas, according to Vedic literature, should be killed. And there is no sin in killing those who are sinful. Of course, that is not to be done by anybody and everybody. That is for those who have the law in their hands, the Kshatriyas. They should do that. So there are, you know, there is an ethical crisis over here for Arjuna. Should he consider them as his family members? Or should he consider them as aggressors? And his duty, if he considers them as family members or as aggressors, are two different things. So he thinks it is better to follow the duty of a family member. Because after all, even if they have done aggression, they have killed. Even if they have done aggression, still, if we retaliate, all that we will get is this kingdom only. And what is the use of the kingdom? Why should we kill our relatives just to get a kingdom? So that's why he feels that because they are our relatives, so we should forgive them. So actually Prabhupada explains in the purport, there are various hierarchies. You know, there is Kautilya wrote Dharma Shastra, Artha Shastra, and he wrote also Niti Shastra. So Artha Shastra is mostly about politics. And Prabhupada writes over there, non-violence in politics may be a matter of diplomatic strategy, but it is never a matter of principle. Sometimes, because the enemy is stronger, we decide that we will not attack right now. Or for some other reason, we decide non-violence may be a matter of strategy. But non-violence is not a principle for a Kshatriya. So, non-violence is a principle for a Brahmana. So, for a Brahmana, there are higher Shastras. So, For from the Kshatriya point of view, aggressor should be killed. But from Brahmana point of view, aggressor should be forgiven. So there are the Artha Shastra and there is the Dharma Shastra. So for example, when Vishwamitra was taking away Vashishtha's cow, Vashishtha did not attack. So only when the cow said, "Why are you taking, letting him be taken away? Are you displeased?" He said, "I am not displeased." Then he says, "I am a Brahmana, I cannot raise weapons." He says, "No, you only command me, I will do the needful." He says, "You stop yourself from being taken." And immediately, the Kamadhenu cow manifested an army from her own body and demolished all of Vishwamitra's soldiers. So the point is, generally a Brahmana does not use weapons. A Brahmana forgives. That's why Parshuram is a notable exception. But in general, Brahmanas forgive. So that's why Arjuna is talking from the level of Dharma Shastra. He's saying, "Oh, we should forgive." But actually, he is not talking in terms of his own duty. He's talking about somebody else's duty. Paradharma. That Krishna will talk about in the third chapter. So, but Arjuna does know Shastra. But he is not able to understand which Shastric Dharma to give priority. Should I do my duty both based on Shastra towards family members or towards aggressors? So then the second chapter starts. At this point, the first 10 verses, Arjuna expresses further reservations and he surrenders. So before he surrenders, now in the last chapter, Arjuna has put aside his bow. And then what does Krishna say? Krishna says that Tantatha Krupaya, we'll recite the verses together. Tantatha, together, 2.1. Tantatha Krupaya Vishtam Ashru Purna Kulekshanam Vishidantam Idam Vakyam Uvacha Madhusudana. So, to that person who is lamenting, Ashru Purna Kulekshanam. So, it's very poetic Sanskrit. Ashru Purna Kulekshanam. Sometimes a glass of water is filled to the lid. So like that, his eyes are filled to the brim with tears and tears are dripping out. Ashru Purna Kulekshanam. And Uvacha Madhusudana. So our Acharyas have done an elaborate analysis of why different names are used for Krishna in different places. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that Madhusudana means the demons can represent desires or doubts. So the doubt which is attacked, Arjuna will be destroyed by Krishna, who is the killer of the Madhusudana demon. Now, before Arjuna, before Krishna starts instructing Arjuna, Krishna and Arjuna right now are friends. So, as friends, Krishna gives Arjuna a pep talk. You know, pep talk means a mundane inspirational talk. Just as, suppose somebody gets some poor marks in an exam. Then another friend will come. You should not get discouraged. You have been a topper throughout. Just one exam goes wrong, what is the problem? If things go wrong, just go on. Things will be alright. So like that, Krishna gives a pep talk. So how does he give a pep talk? He says, "How have such weakness come upon you? Utastva kashmalam idam vishme samupastitam." Kashmala. Kashmala means impurity. Anarajushtamaswargyam akirtikaram Arjuna. So he's not talking any philosophy, he's talking anarajushta aswargyam akirtikaram. Three things he says. Anarya, this is not be who you. You are Arya. Now Prabhupada gives an elaborate analysis of what Arya means. So Arya, Prabhupada explains, is as per the standard of civilization. One who knows the value of life and one who pursues the spiritual goal of life. Aswargyam, it will not lead you to heavens. And not only will it not, it is not, three things Krishna is telling Arjuna. That first is, it does not be who your status. Second is, it will not lead you to heaven. Third is, it will not lead you to fame even in this life. Akirti karam Arjuna. And therefore, then he says, Klaibhyam masmagama partha naita tvayupapadyate. Kshudram rudaya taurbalyam tekto tishtha parantava. So this verse is stronger. It's like a verbal slap to Arjuna. Why? Because two strong words are used. Klaibhya and kshudram. So Arjuna is a kshatriya and for him to call shudra, that's very strong chastisement. And klaibhya means impotence. Impotence means one who is powerless. So for a powerful man to be called an impotent person, it's very, very insulting. But although Krishna tries to stimulate, almost incite Arjuna to fight at a mundane level, Arjuna counters back. And he says, it's not that I am not fighting because of weak-heartedness. I am not fighting because of broad-mindedness. So he says, will you, O Krishna, fight with your own relatives? Katham bhishma maham sankhe dronam cha madhusudana ishu vi prasiyotsyami puja rahavarisudana. So he says, Bhishma and Drona, they are worthy of my worship. I should be offering flowers at their feet. How do you expect that I can shoot arrows at them? And he uses the word Arisudana. He says, you are the killer of your enemies. You are not Yadusudana. You are not the killer of your relatives. So how can you expect me to kill my relatives? And then he says that actually even if I attain a kingdom, that will be tainted with blood. Therefore, I don't want the kingdom. But then, still he is not sure what to do. On one side he doesn't want the kingdom. So now then he speaks the sixth verse. The sixth verse is actually the indecision verse. We'll decide this together. Na chaitad vidmaha katarano gariyo yadva jaye ma yadivano jayeyu yane vahatva na jijivi shamas te avisthita pramukhe dhartarashtra. So, na chaitad vidmaha. Vidmaha means I don't know. What is better for me? Yadva jaye ma yadivano jayeyu. Should I kill them? Should I defeat them? Or should I be defeated by them? So if I defeat them, then I will have to kill them. What is the use of life without them? If I am defeated by them, then for a Kshatriya to be defeated is a great disgrace. And should I go in just leave the battle and go away and live in the forest? I don't know what to do. And then what does he do? He surrenders. This is the famous verse which Prabhupada would often quote. Karpanya dosho patas swabhava prichhami tvam dharma samudha cheta yashreyasya nishchitam bruhi tanme shishyaste ham shadhimam tvam prapannam. So, surrender to you, my dear Lord, and I ask you, what is shreya for me? What is the long term benefit for me? Karpanya, I am overcome by miserly weakness. Prabhupada's purport mostly elaborates on this term, Karpanya. Who is a miser? And then, Arjuna's words are not taken at face value by Krishna. Krishna is still testing. Or you may say, I am your disciple, I am surrendered to you. But actually, surrender means that one actually considers no other alternative workable. Only surrender is workable. And therefore, Chakravarti Pal explains that Krishna is, tells Arjuna, why are you surrendering to me? We are friends. You can go to Vyasadeva, you can go to Narad Muni, you can ask them. He says, no, I don't see any other solution. Nahi prapashyami manama panudyaya chokam choshanam indriyana avapya bhumavasattanam rajyam rajyam suranam apichadipatyam. That even if I give the heavenly kingdom, still my senses will be dried up. I will be unhappy. So Prabhupada talks in the purport about how, you know, there is external achievement and there is internal stability. We may achieve a lot externally, but if internally we are not stable, if internally we are not happy, peaceful, we cannot think and dry up our grief. So then he surrenders. And then, prahasanniva bharata. When he surrenders, Krishna smiles. So prahasan means prasanna. He is smiling. So, of course, Krishna is not smiling out of a sadistic pride that Arjuna is so miserable. You know, just like somebody we are a competitor with and that person suffers. We have a sadistic pleasure we get in making the other. But he is actually smiling to see the working of his own maya. How such a wonderful friend has become bewildered. Prahasan eva. So that's why it's not Prahasan Bharata. It's as if he smiled. So he is smiling because he was compassionate and he wanted to relieve the anxiety of Arjuna and through Arjuna of the whole world. So, now from verses, this is the first section. From verses 11 to 13, Krishna will enlighten Arjuna. So basically the whole theme of chapter 2 is fight. Or the first thing is fight because your relatives are not your bodies. And therefore, they are not going to die. They are imperishable. So, can you just go to the next slide? So now it's very interesting. First again, now this time what does Arjuna Krishna do? Krishna doesn't just give a pep talk, he chastises actually. See, earlier also he chastises, but earlier chastisement, this is unworthy of you. But here he chastises more strongly. He says, although you are speaking learned words, you don't know what is actual knowledge. So you don't know what is actual knowledge. So he actually tells him that what you know is actually causing your illusion. Prabhupada says that in a Bhagavatam purport, that modern education means expanding the ignorance. Actually expanding the ignorance. To know that we do not know is also knowledge. But to know that, to not know that we do not know is ignorance. It's great ignorance. It is such an ignorance that one cannot come out of it. I think that's what Socrates said, you know. To know what we know and to know what we don't know. That is knowledge. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that what you have so-called knowledge is not actual knowledge. Ashochana, ashochastam. And now it's very interesting that actually, in one sense, Krishna refutes impersonalism before refuting materialism. So the verse, I can decide this. So his next 2-3 verses are very regularly quoted by Prabhupada, so we'll decide them. 12th verse. Natvevaham jatunasam natvam neme janadhipa nachaivana bhavishyamaha sarvevayamata param. Sarvevayamata param. All of us are going to be there always. All these kings, you and me, we all existed in the past, we are existing now, and we will exist in the future. So we are all eternal. Now, it's not just we are eternal, we are actually eternal individuals. And this is what Ramanujacharya strongly emphasizes in his purport. And Prabhupada practically replicates this purport over here. So Ramanujacharya argues, somebody may say, actually this is just conventional. Actually, even the Mayavadis say, I and you will talk. Although we know at the transcendental level, I am you and you and I. But at a conventional level, we will talk like that. So, Ramanujacharya says that Krishna has already condemned the conventional level in the previous verse. Ashochanam Sochastam. And his next verse also, Dehi Nosmin Yathadehi, he is talking at the transcendental level. So, in between, he will not talk at the conventional level. So, he is actually talking at a transcendental level. So, that is, we are not only eternal, but we are eternal and individual. So that's the first argument Ramanujacharya gives. Second argument he says that even if you argue that this individuality is temporary, the question arises, what about Krishna's individuality? He's including himself also. If Krishna's individuality also illusory, then there's no point of hearing Bhagavad Gita from him. Because he's also an illusion. And if his eternality is eternal, then he's saying I and you. So he's talking about duality. So therefore, either way, this verse strongly refutes impersonalism. Then the famous verse comes, Dehi nosmin yatha dehe. How we are not the body, we are the soul. And then Arjuna says, yeah, I know this Krishna. I know that you are not the body or the soul. But still, you know, it's natural to have affection for one's relatives. How can I not have affection for my relatives? Then Krishna tells, yes, what should you do? Tolerate. Matra sparshastu kaunteya. So, he compares two natural things which we tolerate. Shitoshna sukha dukkadaha agamapayinutya stamsitiksha swabharata. So, just as we tolerate heat and cold, we have to do some adjustments. You know, we are like, many of us are wearing sweaters or mufflers or whatever we do, but we continue our duties. Like that, we should continue. And what is the fruit of the tolerance? That fruit is amrut tattvaya kalpate. In 2.15 he says, Yamhina vithayantete purusham purusharshabha. So throughout actually, you will see that the mundane connections are not rejected. They are utilized to inspire one towards duty. So now Arjuna as purusharshabha, Arjuna as partha, Arjuna as kaunteya, Arjuna as kurunandana. Now, these in one sense we can say, oh, he's just talking about his which lineage, he is in bharata, bharatarshabha. Why is he using all these? Oh, because you come to such a glorious dynasty, therefore you should act in a way that is worthy for your dynasty. So even the mundane connections can be used to inspire people to perform their duty. As like when Prabhupada brought his Western disciples to India, he said, all of you are Americans. If you don't do something wonderful, What is the use of your being American? So then that yogi said, yes, we should do something wonderful. Then in that big Hare Krishna festival was there. You know, the first time there, one of the first times, they make these helium balloons. Huge balloon on top of VT station. Practically at that time, there were no skyscrapers in Mumbai. So everywhere, from every part of Mumbai, could see that balloon. It was written, Hare Krishna on that balloon. That's how they did publicity for the Pandal program. So, Prabhupada also used, the mundane connections can be used for inspiring one to perform one's duty. And then, Krishna becomes a little more philosophical. He says, okay, how does one differentiate? So we'll recite this verse, this is 2.16. All of you have a Gita? Nasato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. Ubhayorapi drishtonta tvanayastatvadarshibhi. So, na asato vidyate bhavo. Someone will say, oh, how can I tolerate? It's so difficult to tolerate. She says, no, that which is asat, it is as good as non-existent. Na asato vidyate bhavo. Na asat means that is temporary, actually non-existent only. How can we say it is non-existent? It's like a dream. As soon as you wake up from the dream becomes non-existent. Although at that time, the dream may be very real to us, but all that is required is the passage of time. And the dream will disappear. So like that, whatever is there in this world, just tolerate it. Whatever difficulties are there, whatever, even pleasures are there, tolerate it. So of the non-existent, there is no endurance. And of the eternal, there is no cessation. So the eternal relationship with Krishna that we have, eternal identity as souls we have, that can be practiced even in this situation. And he says, therefore, the wise who are there, they distinguish between these two tattvas. And then further elaborating on these two tattvas, Krishna takes the next verse. He says that, avinashita tadviddhi yena sarvamidam tatam vinasham avyasyasya nakashchit kartum arhasi. Oh, nobody can kill that imperishable soul. Now the Mayavadis catch this word. Yena sarvamidam tatam. Say, that soul pervades everything. It's actually the soul and the super soul are non-different. Yena sarvamidam tatam. By whom everything is pervaded. So if you see the context, Prabhupada explains that which pervades the whole body. Because if you see the few verses earlier, Dehinosmini Sadeh he was talking about. And then the next verse after this is 2.18 is Antavanta ime deha. So what is being talked about is the deha. It's not talking about a Vishwa at all. So we cannot take rip one verse out of its context and proclaim that it establishes impersonalism. But Ramanujacharya in his Gita Vashya gives a brilliant understanding why he uses the yena sarvamidam tatam. Because the context over here is that it's avinashi. It's imperishable. So he explains that normally, how does one object destroy another object? It is by pervading or entering that object. How does a bullet kill? The bullet enters into the body. How does a knife kill? It enters into the body. How does even a person gets drowned? What happens? The water enters. Person gets burned, the fire enters. So he says that which is meant to destroy has to enter and pervade that which is to be destroyed. But the soul is so subtle that it pervades everything. Therefore, whatever you attack, the soul will enter into that. Or that object will not be able to enter and pervade the soul. Therefore, yena sarvamidam tatam. So he says, here sarvam refers to what? Bhumirapo nalovayu khammano buddhirevacha. All these elements, you use them to destroy the soul cannot be destroyed. Therefore, vinasham avyasya nakashchit. Nothing can destroy that soul. And then, after that he says, antavanta ime deha nityasyokta sharirinaha. Anashino aprameyasya. They say anashino aprameyasya. It's immeasurable. Now the word immeasurable does not mean immeasurably great. It means immeasurably small. It's so tiny. It's immeasurably small. Now the Prabhupada Gita talks from the Shweta Shvetara Upanishad here. And Shikesha Drishta Bhagasya. You know that verse. 1/10,000 of a tip of a hair. So now of course this is a empirical explanation, indication of what is actually a spiritual entity. So we get some idea that the soul is very small by that. And then after this,
Krishna continues the theme of how the soul is imperishable. And it goes on for several verses. And while talking about this theme, he also explains the famous analogy of we are actually the body is like a dress, vasam sijiranani. So that is 2.22. We'll not go over all the verses because we'll not be able to complete everything. But vasam sijiranani is a very practical verse he used. So Prabhupada explained the purport. If somebody gives up an old dress and takes a new dress, we'll be happy, not miserable. So like that, Bhishma and Drona, they are going to get a new dress. And certainly they have been dutiful throughout their lives. Although right now they may be doing some wrong choice. But because they are doing duty throughout their lives, they will going to get a better body. Either they are going to get liberated or they are going to go to heaven. That heaven will be talked about a little bit later more. But the point is, see, every verse, the philosophy has a context. So we should always remember that what is Arjuna's main concern? How can I kill Bhishma and Drona? Therefore, this section is not titled, "You are not your boy." Arjuna's fear is not that I am going to die. Arjuna's fear is, how can I kill my relatives? So your relatives are not your bodies. Therefore, they are not going to die. Therefore, fight. So actually, you will give them better bodies. And to reassure them once again, Krishna re-emphasizes that same thing in two verses. What does he say? He goes, Nainam chinnanti shastrani, nainam dahati pavaka, na chainam kledayantyapo, na shosheti marutaha. So Prabhupada explains about the subtle technology over there. So all the elements that are there in creation, they can be used to make the weapons of destruction. So whatever weapon you use, it cannot destroy. And then, this section, is called the physics and the chemistry of the soul. You would call it the physics. So, it cannot be destroyed. What is the chemistry? You know, the chemistry of the properties of matter. So, achedyoyam adahayoyam akledyo ashoshyevacha. It is insoluble, it is impenetrable, it is unwitherable. So, he talks about all these things. Now, there is one very interesting over here. There are two interesting. Achaloyam sanatanaha. Achala means immovable. And then there is the next verse also there is sarvagataha, all pervading. So achala means immovable. So now, is the soul movable? Obviously we are moving it, isn't it? Or rather the soul is moving us. So what does it mean the soul is immovable? It means that the soul cannot be moved against his will. That his soul is moved only by his own desires. So even the Yamdutas come and they have the Yamapasha. That Yamapasha doesn't catch the soul. It catches the subtle body. And because the soul is attached to the subtle body, the soul goes with it. Just like if somebody is watching TV. And then some thief comes and steals the TV away. So what he does is he also goes, continues watching the TV and goes to the TV. It is like that. So, because he is attached. And then Sarvagataha is also used by the Mayavad. It's all pervading. But Prabhupada explains, this, what does it mean, Sarvagata? That the individual soul has the capacity to live everywhere. In that sense, it has the capacity to exist in all circumstances, Sarvagata. So Prabhupada uses this to talk about life on other planets. So there is life everywhere. Deha Sarvagata Sthanar Achaloyam Sanatanaha. Achaloyam. Immovable. The soul is not movable and the soul is Sarvagataha. Now, after giving so many descriptions, so if you see, the Bhagavad Gita yesterday I was telling, it is like an Upanishad. So what is the trademark of the Upanishads? Naiti, naiti, not this, not this, not this. So Krishna is also saying, Nainam chinnam chastrani, achedyoyam, adayoyam. So many times he's telling, I'm from the negative side. That actually, the soul is not this, not this, not this, not this. He has to tell that because we cannot positively think of what the soul actually is. Ittiha sarvagata sthanur achaloyam sanatanaha. So the positive description is yena sarvamidam tatam. Negative descriptions are, all of you understand negative description, positive description, what it is not. It is not destroyed by matter, it is not destroyed by this, it is not this, it is not this. So you can see actually the Upanishads here in the second chapter as well as in the Upanishadic style will come, especially in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, after talking about this, Krishna is going to talk about, he's continuing the same argument on a different track. It's like,
you know, if you have played chess, no need to remember that now, but all of you know, sometimes you do check, and then what happens? Then some, the person moves the king somewhere else. But then, the king has no place to move, then it is checkmate. So actually, Krishna is going to checkmate Arjuna. So first is check. Check what? You know, you are saying you are going to kill them. Oh, but they are not going to be killed, because they are all eternal. And somebody says, I don't believe in the soul. I am going to evade that. Even if you don't believe in the soul. So, he talks the materialistic way of life. And he explains, Atha chainam nitya jatam nityam vamanya senatam athapitam mahabaho nainam shochitum arasi. Even if you say that the soul never existed, the soul was never, there's nothing called the soul, actually there's only the body. And the body exists and the body dies. Then he says, still there is no need to lament. You say, how there is no need to lament? He says, avyaktadini bhutani vyaktamadhyani bharata avyaktanidhnanyai vatatraka paridevana. So he gives the example that this verse, everything was unmanifested before, it becomes manifest now, it becomes unmanifest again. So what is the need to lament? So he says, okay, if there is nothing, something called as a soul, then that means all your relatives are just chemicals. And if they are just chemicals, then nobody laments if some chemicals are lost. Isn't it? So many chemicals are lost constantly. Every time we go and respond to nature, we waste so many chemicals. We flush them away immediately. So he says, actually, what is the need to lament if they are just chemicals? Then, if you are just the material elements, and then there is no such thing as soul, then there is no need to lament. Because this life is all that you have. As they say, you have only, in Christianity they say, you have only one shot at living. Like one shot at living. You know, sometimes you have this contest where you have to shoot a balloon. Only one shot you have. If you don't shoot, you lose everything. So like that, they have one shot at living. But that's the idea. So you have only, so then why worry about duty? Why worry about destiny? Why worry about karma? Just enjoy. But then he said, oh Arjuna, I know that you are not so foolish. You are not going to believe this philosophy. Right? This is what Arjuna will say, that the soul is so difficult to understand, oh Krishna. Yes, then there is a famous verse, amazing verse. So you recite this verse, this is a very nice verse. This is 29, I think, isn't it? 2.29. So, Ashcharyavat pashyati kashchit enam. Can repeat? Yeah, you can repeat after me. Ashcharyavat pashyati kashchit enam.
Ashcharyavat pashyati kashchit enam.
Ashcharyavat vadati tathaiva cha. Ashcharyavat chainam. What is Ashcharyavat Vathati Tathai Vachanya?
Ashcharyavat Vathati Tathai Vachanya.
Ashcharyavat Chainam Anya Shrunoti.
Ashcharyavat Chainam Anya Shrunoti.
Shrutvapyenam Vedana Chaiva Kashchit.
Shrutvapyenam Vedana Chaiva Kashchit.
So, Chakravarti Pada and Baldev Vidyabhushan, they give beautiful analysis. Ashcharyavat, amazing. So this amazing adjective can apply to enam or to these people or the soul. So Prabhupada actually gives one of the analysis about the soul, he says. So let's take this very interesting verse. So he says, some people, Ashcharyavat Pashyati Kashchit, some people see the soul as amazing. That means, Prabhupada gives the example, enlightened person thinks, oh, how is it possible that, see, the soul is there in a microscopic germ, thousands of which cover one desk, and the same soul is there in a giant elephant. It's amazing. Both are getting the energy from the same soul. So some people see, it's amazing how the same soul is pervading the world. Ashcharyavat chainam, ashcharyavat vadati tathaiva chanya. Some people, they're not seen about it, but they're speaking about it. No, we are not the body, we are the soul. It's so amazing. So they think, yes, you should tell all everybody, you know, you're not the body, the soul, why are you running after sense gratification? So we all fall in that level. No, we have heard about it and we are speaking about it. But we have not realized it. And then another level is, some people hear about the soul and they are, it's amazing. Oh, I'm not the body, I'm the soul. Nobody ever told me that. So Ashcharyavad Chainam Anya Shunoti. And there are some other people, Shutva Penam Vedana Chaivishar, Vedana Chaiva Kashchit. Even after you hear so much, you don't understand. How can you believe in the soul? You can't see it. You can't, there's no change in the body, there are no chemicals, you can't do any test. There's no soul. How can you believe in the soul? They say this idea of soul is amazing. So, this is, some people see the soul as amazing, speak about the soul as amazing, hear about the soul as amazing, eh? And don't understand the soul as if it's a strange concept. So, modern scientists call ghost in the machine. They say, you know, you think that there's a ghost in the body, just a machine, and you think there's a ghost in the machine which is running the body. You are going on ghost hunting. And now the other way of analyzing this is that some people who are amazing see the soul, self-realized people. And some people who are amazing speak about the soul. You know, everybody chasing after materialism and some people, you know, they are trying, oh, you're not the body, you're the soul, they're preaching that. First time we meet devotees, we find it's amazing, isn't it? Who are these people? And some amazing people hear about the soul. Brahmanda Brahmite Koda Bhagyavanaji. Very fortunate people come and hear about the soul. And some amazing people never understand the soul. So, you know, how can a person live without understanding who am I? How can a person live without knowing who is he trying to make happy? So, this way, the same adjective can be applied to both words, and we get a consistent philosophical understanding. So, there can be contradictions within the acharyas. But the contradiction is not, say for example, there is a difference of opinion between, say, Bhima and Duryodhana. And the difference of opinion between Bhima and Yudhishthira. So now, although there are differences of opinion, there are very different differences of opinion. Bhima and Yudhishthira are thinking, should we punish Ashwatthama or should we not punish Ashwatthama? Whereas Bhima and Duryodhana is thinking of disrobing Draupadi, of dispossessing the Pandavas, of arresting Krishna. Bhima is thinking about, you know, Krishna should be installed as the Agrapurush in the Rajasuya. So, the difference of opinion is very different between a devotee and a non-devotee and a devotee and another devotee. So, both devotees come to the same conclusion that we have to serve Krishna and glorify Krishna. So, you will see the acharyas may give different understandings, but they are all ultimately meant for the glorification of Krishna. So, Baldev Vidya Bhushan in his Vedanta Sutra commentary explains that actually reasoning which is done according to scripture is called as uha or vichara. So he says that the scriptures talk about the glory of the Lord, but the devotee by using his own reasoning ability can expand the glory of the Lord. So reasoning is not rejected. Reasoning is very important. In fact, the whole tattva sandarbha is about reasoning. But this reasoning is according to scripture. So like that, there is one verse, and this is a Asharya. Now what does it mean? Different acharyas may give different insights. And that increases our relish. But all the acharyas are actually giving us an understanding which only leads to enhancing the sweetness of the message. Enhancing, so that we can relish it more and more. And then Krishna concludes this section by saying, Dehi Nityam Abadhyoyam. He is Sarva Subhartha. He says, I know that which is present in us, all souls is imperishable. Abadhyoyam. You cannot be killed. And therefore, he says, you should not, it is not behoove you to lament. In fact, the variant of this verse, Natvam Shochitum Arhasi, it comes at least 5 to 6 times in this section. So, therefore, it does not behoove you. In Hindi, Tumhe Shokta Nahi Aisa Bartao. So like that, it does not behoove you. A person, you are Arya, you are an Italian person. It does not behoove you to lament like this. So it's interesting if you see the Bhagavad Gita starts with Shochitum, Ashochiti, and it ends with Ma Shuchaha, do not lament. So actually, we are all lamenting in the material world. Prabhupada says, most of our material existence, what are we doing? Two things, hankering and lamenting. And hankering for what we don't have, lamenting for what we lost or what we haven't got. So Krishna said, don't lament. Don't lament. Why? Because they are eternal and they will get a better destination. Stick to your duty and move forward. So this is the first section. I don't... how many of you have some questions? Okay, one. Okay. Two. The next section is very brief. Maybe I'll take it tomorrow then. So, just one quick point. Yesterday I mentioned about how Bhishma spell. So how it is that Sanjay was not with Dhritarashtra throughout. Sanjay went to the battlefield of Kurukshetra and he was there for 10 days. And there he saw the fall of Bhishma. And then he ran back. Such a momentous event that he went back to Hastinapur where Dhritarashtra was there. He told him, he asked, what has happened in the battlefield? He says, Bhishma has fallen. What? When he heard Bhishma has fallen, he fell down from his. Dhritarashtra fell down and fainted. And then he came back to his consciousness. He was dazed. He says, please tell me everything. And then he starts telling everything. So in that sense, the narration of the first 10 chapters is like a backflash. And then, from then onwards, it's like a running commentary, which goes on. So he has that mystic vision. But he doesn't he doesn't start the narration right from the beginning. And this whole narration, so actually the Bhagavad Gita is a dialogue at three levels. At one level, it is a dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna. At another level, it is a dialogue between Sanjay and Dhritarashtra. Sanjay is also trying to enlighten Dhritarashtra in parampara. What he has heard from Krishna is repeating. So, he's repeating as it is, practically. Not adding anything. Of course, he does add, Yatra Yogeshwaro Krishna, Yatra Partha Anudara. He adds a few verses. There are, as Sanjay speaks in three sections. The first chapter, 11th chapter, and the 18th chapter. 11th chapter, he is describing what Arjuna saw. Then he describes what Arjuna saw, and then he starts speaking Arjuna Uvacha, then what Arjuna speaks. And then he also speaks in the 18th chapter, where he gives his conclusion. So it's also a conversation between the soul and the super soul. So actually, we are also in the chariot of the body. And we also may get perplexed, we may also start lamenting. So that we have to surrender to Krishna, please guide me. And these words of Krishna can illuminate us. And they can help us to understand our duty and become fixed in our duty. Yes, sir.
You spoke about different acharyas giving different commentaries on the same verse. So, how to understand this? I mean, where does it demarcate from being an interpretation than giving what Krishna desires? Like, when Krishna speaks, will he not have a specific understanding of the verse that should come? Because then we can say that every time an acharya, an enlightened acharya, can speak about that verse in a different manner, and then there could be the unlimited interpretations of the same verse. So how do we understand this? That it's not that Krishna has a specific understanding of a particular verse to be spoken. So how do we demarcate this from an interpretation?
Yeah, very good question. If you see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Sanatana Goswami and Sarva Bhattacharya gave dozens and dozens of interpretations of the Atmarama verse. Almost 61 interpretations he gave. So you may say, that is also free thinking, So he is giving so many interpretations. So the point is that although Krishna has a specific intention when he speaks, the intention is that he wants Arjuna to fight. But Krishna is unlimitedly wise. And therefore, in every word of Krishna, there can be unlimited wisdom. And different acharyas throughout history, he can reveal what the purport is. So that's why it's not that Krishna's words are frozen in time. Krishna's words are living. And because they are living, there's a living reciprocation. And depending on the way we approach Krishna, we will get realizations accordingly. So now where does it become a interpretation? In one sense, everything that anybody speaks is an interpretation. But the question is whether the interpretation is consistent with the conclusion or contrary to the conclusion. So there is a siddhanta, siddhanta, the conclusion. So that conclusion is very clear in the Gita. That's not ambiguous. There is some ambiguity in the Gita, which we may address as we go along the verses, if we get time. But as far as the conclusion is concerned, Krishna says, Vedaishya sarvai aham eva vedyo. Or sarvadharman paritya mamekam sharanam raja. The conclusion is quite clear. So we can look at the conclusion from two ways. One way is, what is the conclusive thing that Krishna speaks? And second is, what is the action that Arjuna does? So Arjuna doesn't go and practice Ashtanga Yoga, Arjuna doesn't become a jnani. He works. So it's action and devotion. So there is the conclusion of scripture. And any understanding of scripture that is in accordance with the conclusion of the scripture, that is a bona fide understanding. So, 2 points in the answer. First point is that Krishna's words are not frozen in time, they are living. Because Krishna is unlimitedly wise, there is unlimited wisdom that is packed in every one of Krishna's words. And how does one know something is a commentary or an elaboration or it's a deviation? That's based on comparing with the Siddhant, the conclusion. Okay? Any other questions? Yes, true. Correct.
So he saw actual speaking, or we also hear that it was revealed. And
that's fine.
So how it is like, how he gets to know? He has actually seen or he?
No, the Bhagavad Gita he saw while it was there, and then he's repeating the whole thing.
So what was the specific qualification of his?
Vyasa Deva had given him the benediction. Vyasa Prasada Achutva. Etat Shutamaha. Etat Guhyam Aham Param. So Vyasa had given him in the not just the mystical vision by which he could see. Dura Darshan. Dura Shravana Darshan it is called. Not just Dura Darshan. Dura Shravana Darshan. He is able to see and he is able to hear also. That is one of the Siddhis described in the 25th chapter of the 11th canto by Krishna to Uddhava. So he had a Dura Shravana Darshan given by Vyasa to him. But that is not necessary. That is not what is fundamental for him to understand. Because, you know, Duryodhana was much closer to Sanjay, but still he didn't understand. So the blessing of Vyasadeva was that actually he gave him the consciousness, the bhakti by which he could understand it. So Vyasa Prasada is not just the mystical vision, it is a devotional consciousness. That was his qualification. Okay? Yes, last question. Yeah. No, that's what he says. So he says that, okay, tell me everything from the beginning. So then he is describing, he goes back, okay, so from there he starts describing. So this is how the army is assembled, and this is what Bhishma said, this is what this person said, this is what this person said, this is how the Pandavas went and asked Bhishma how we can kill you, and then everything goes on. And then he says, now the armies are assembled in the battlefield. And then he says, okay, tell me what happened now. So the flashback is not starting from the Bhagavad Gita. The flashback goes further back. The flashback goes to when the army starts assembling, and then there is discussion of the rules of conduct, appointment of the commanders, and then it comes. Okay, now they have assembled, now what happens? Okay. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Itai Gaur Premande.